Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the program. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. Once again, our focus is on the very, very sad and disturbing Hayley Cummings and Kaylee Anthony cases. Helping me to unravel the mysteries are several guests. Most importantly, my wife, Jan.
Very well said. Hello, everyone.
From Sin City, Nevada, we have author and crime writer, otherwise known as the Crime Doctor, Denny Griffin. Denny, how's it going?
It's going great, Simon. Thank you very much, and greetings to everybody.
And from Maine, we have investigator Peter Hyatt. Peter, nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to be on. Thank you.
I am hoping that T.J. Hart is going to be joining us. He did say that he would be, but I know that he has some other commitments today, so let's just wait and see if he makes the show. As always, our phone lines are open. The switchboard number is 646-378-1120. You're also welcome to ask your questions in our chat room. Let's start the program with an update on the Kaylee Anthony case. Jan, as I understand it, the new judge called in all of the parties for a hearing this week. What happened?
Well, really it wasn't as much as I expected it to be, but or was hoping it would be, but we did get some kind of good news out of him. It seems that this judge is not quite going to buy the deal about giving the change of venue for the case. He's worried about the expenses, which I agree with him on. I mean, that's going to be awful expensive if they've got a 250-plus witness list. Yeah, witness list. I had to take a breath. Anyway, plus they would have to house and feed all them, plus all the members in the defense team, the prosecution's team, and the jurors, too, also. And that would be quite expensive because they're expecting the trial to go, I mean, anywhere from 4 weeks to possibly 2 months or more. And that's a lot of expense. So he's saying that he would really suggest leaving the trial there and possibly going somewhere else to pick a jury and then bring them back to Orlando for the trial instead.
It's sort of like bussing them in.
Right, so to speak. And let's see, he also is planning to determine a budget for the defense team, he said, by Thursday. And he said that needs to be done like yesterday. So he's not going to mess around with it. He's wanting some more answers. I mean, he wants to get this on the road. I mean, he needs to get the ball rolling on this. And it doesn't look like he's going to put up with very much because I know I've always said every time I see him in court that I can't stand that smirk on Baez's face. But I did notice when I was watching the video of the trial, I mean of this courtroom that day, that he didn't have that smile on his face for very long. He was sitting there like, oh no, what have I done? I mean, that's my opinion, of course, but it was a change of seeing him without that smirk on his face, not to mention the smirk that was on Cindy Anthony's face when the judge started talking about the change of venue, but it did kind of disappear after a little while after he got finished with what he was saying. But it is indefinite. He hasn't decided for sure yet, but I think that's what he's going to go with.
All right. Well, one of the things that I know many journalists were hoping for was that he was going to say, hey, why are we waiting till May 2011? But he hasn't come down with a ruling on that.
No, he didn't change. He didn't say anything about that, as far as I know. But and then again, he could possibly still do it, but I think some people were expecting him to change it. I mean, that's a long time from now. I just don't understand how they can put it off that long and why they need it to be that long, but that's what they're claiming anyway.
Okay, Denny, you're our crime expert. Do you think that they can possibly get this trial done in 4 to 6 weeks?
With my knowledge of the defense team, no.
No, more like 4 to 6 years.
I'm thinking it's going to be a while. First, it seems like it's never going to start. And if and when it does, I don't think it's going to be a speedy trial. Hopefully I'm wrong on that. I'd like to see it get out there, get started soon. And, you know, with everyone's rights protected, proceed promptly to a conclusion.
I think that they can just drag this trial out as long as they can.
Peter, you followed the Kaylee Anthony case from the beginning. What do you think? Is it possible to squeeze it into 4 to 6 weeks?
Well, I think that Jen is actually on the right trail there when it comes down to how much money is going to be spent. I do not see this going to trial whatsoever. I think there'll be a cap on the money they can spend. I think that Jose Baez will ride it to the last penny. But I don't think that there's any way that he can take this thing to trial. I don't think that Mason is going to be willing to risk his reputation. He had, in the same type of bravado that Jose Baez shows, he said that he'd be walking arm-in-arm with Casey Anthony walking free, and that is not going to happen. I can't see them bringing this to trial. There's a lot of bluster and a lot of smoke and mirrors. I don't see it going to trial.
Am I hearing that you think that they're just going to put in a, you know, no contest plea or something like that?
Well, this is the tricky part. I think he'd like to ride it for the sake of fame and fortune for as much as he can, but I don't see that coming to a good conclusion, and it's certainly not in the best interest of Casey Anthony. However, with the type of pushing that he's done or poking the tiger in terms of the prosecution and law enforcement and others, he's insulted everyone. And some people have suggested that the people of Florida themselves will protest and say, we don't want a plea bargain. We want this to go to trial. So will prosecutors offer a plea? I don't know. It would be a very normal thing to see her get 30 years, for instance, rather than the death penalty. Some people suggest that the prosecution will not be willing to plea, but it would save the state of Florida a great deal of money by not going to trial, and I don't think it's in Casey Anthony's best interest to go to trial. I really don't.
Okay, Denny, the thing that I found amusing was the judge's idea that, no, we're not going to move the venue. We might just move the jurors. What do you make of that? Have you ever heard of a case where that's been done?
As a matter of fact, Simon, I haven't. At least I don't recall any. Although I guess it makes sense if they, you know, from a cost-cutting measure to accommodate Baez's concerns, you know, about the fair and impartial jury and yet save the taxpayers some money. So, but again, I don't recall of ever having heard of that being done before. Not saying it hasn't, I just haven't heard of it. And I had a question probably to direct to Peter about the, you know, his idea that perhaps this will not end up in trial. There'll be some kind of a deal struck prior to that. Do you think, Peter, that part of the equation that prosecutors will think about. I've heard the same thing you mentioned, that they're not inclined to make a deal. But do you think that the potential public firestorm, I mean, a lot of people are clamoring for Casey's head. Do you think that will be part of the equation, or will be strictly financial, or strictly on the strength of the case, or some combination, when they make their decision about whether or not a plea bargain is appropriate?
I think there will be, in this case, public pressure put on the prosecution not to offer a plea. The defense has gone out of their way to tweak the noses of those involved. And then when we look at Casey's post-crime behavior, that is just so provocative. And the grandmother, Cindy Anthony, has made it worse. She has actually made it worse on her daughter by looking to market and sell the name. I was thinking about this early on. The judge seemed to me, and I saw it on Friday, I saw the online, the judge seemed to me, with the change of venue idea of shipping the jurors in, that he was taking control of this case. That he was saying, this is not going to be media-driven, this is not going to be the good old boys and you're going to trust me sort of thing. That he is down to business and this is going to take place. And I think that by mentioning an earlier date, he's sending a very strong signal to them. He's not going to let it drag on. He's not going to let Jose Baez continue to do all sorts of foolish motions and all sorts of delay tactics. He's down to business, and I think eventually Mason's going to turn to Baez and say, we've gotten everything we can out of this. It's over. I think that's when this story gets interesting. I think that's when we see Jose Baez do some very strange things. Just a thought, just an idea, but I think he's in trouble. I think his license is going to be in trouble. I think he's done some unethical things and inappropriate things. And he has sought to build a career on a case that has just really backfired into his face. So I don't see the other attorneys wanting it to go to trial. I see Jose Baez staying on the sinking ship as long as possible. And I'm not sure about the prosecution's response to all this. They've not gone before the cameras. They've not needed to. The case is strong on its own merit. Quite frankly, it's a slam dunk. But I'm curious to see is how the public will react. So, Danny, I guess the answer to the question is, yes, I think the public is going to respond strongly to the prosecutors.
I have to say I agree with everyone on this. I was shocked, actually, that Baez went after Judge Strickland. Strickland was a very liberal judge in that he was allowing Baez a great deal of wriggle room. This new judge, Belvin Perry, he does not seem to share that idea. I suspect that Baez is now regretting going after Strickland.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree.
Well, I said before that he was making a big mistake. I mean, because Judge Strickland did give him a lot of room to play around on this. But, of course, his reasons was so that way they could never come back with a and say that the judge did this, the judge did that, and it was unfair and all that kind of stuff. So he gave them a lot of room to have what they wanted, which they shouldn't have got all the time.
Do you remember the substantial evidence? I'm sorry, Jen.
That's okay.
Do you remember the substantial evidence that the defense was going to bring forth to show that the client was innocent?
Yes.
Yeah, right. That was due February 1st, as I recall.
Still waiting on that one.
I wonder what happened to it. Maybe the U.S. Mail lost the letter or something.
Or that, or Todd, what was his name?
Macuso?
Yeah, whatever his name was, maybe he took it with him when he left.
Oh, actually, that's another minor piece of news.
Yeah.
I understand he has lost his license to practice.
He can't. He's officially off the defense team right now. He's
Well, no, he's officially off the being an attorney list.
He's no longer an attorney.
Well, they really got a good list there, don't they?
Yeah, well, the issue is that letter. I'm sorry, there's the money that was donated from a private source. The speculation is that did he donate money to become part of this team?
Yes, he
and
did.
And if he did, if that's his $50,000, the anonymous $50,000, did that come from him?
In one of the hearings, can't remember which one, Baez did fess up that Todd was a contributor. And that in itself makes for an ugly legal situation. You know, what was he buying a seat at the table?
That certainly is the appearance of it, and that's what I was alluding to. Is also, what money did he donate? Was it his or his clients back in California?
Ooh,
that's a good question.
that's a very good question. I guess you'd have to talk to his clients.
I tell you, Judge Strickland, his final motion that he recluse himself, the writing of that did reveal that Baez's antics and his nonsense had really stolen the joy of his work from him. But that last letter, that last statement, at its core, defense counsel's motion accuses the undersigned of being, quote, self-aggrandizing media hound. Indeed, the irony is rich. Motion granted. I love that. I love that.
Oh, that was priceless. And, I mean, it does go to show that, you know, Strickland is a human being. You know? And what he's saying is, you're an idiot. Pure and simple.
Simon, I don't think that Baez ever dreamed that Strickland was going to actually go through with this motion and recluse himself. I thought it was just another grandstanding move that caught Baez by surprise and really was not in Casey Anthony's best interest. You're right, he was a very liberal, very generous, a very patient judge that may have even gone too far at times, and he just shot himself in the foot. And that's what happens when we play those type of games.
Denny, what were your thoughts when you heard the news that Strickland was off the case?
I think I share everybody's opinion here that I thought Judge Strickland probably wasn't the worst thing that could happen to the defense. And what's the old line about be careful what you wish for? Well, they wanted it, and maybe now they got it, and I don't think they're going to be real happy with the result.
Okay, let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. As is frequently the situation, all of the official sources have gone quiet again. They seem to specialize in this. You have 3 weeks of nothing. You have a week of lots and another week of talking about it. And the cycle repeats. Officially, there's not much going on this week. So I decided to go digging in the files. And there is a wealth of information out there if you know where to look. I came across a jailhouse tape between Tommy Croslin and his wife, Lindsay. And it really caught my attention. Not only is the content curious, but the size of it. It's only a couple of minutes long. And, well, I have a theory, and I also have it queued up. So I'm going to play it.
Okay.
I guess I could give it a try.
Okay.
But I'm ready to be back up around my brother and my nieces.
I know. They ain't going to make it there long, Tom.
Yeah, they will. They ain't coming back to Florida, I guarantee that. Tim ain't going to come back here.
Tim, I think sometimes, just the way Tim talks, he wants to.
Tim won't come back to Florida.
Why?
Ask him that. He don't like it here. Are people bothering us all the damn time? The damn police constantly messing with us?
Yeah,
you don't want that.
If they find Haley, they won't be messing with you like that anymore.
I know.
It all has to do with finding the little girl, Tom.
I know.
And if it was my little girl, I would not care who was in jail either.
I don't either. Never said I did, you know, I never said nothing like that. I just don't like Florida altogether.
I know, I want them to find her and our
Me
whole
too.
Our lives to be different. Find out who did it.
I don't know. The damn cop's still gonna bother us.
No, they're not. Once they find Haley, once who knows anything, any teeny tiny little piece of information.
I know, baby. I don't even want to talk about that no more. I love you.
Why? Why?
Because that shit's just, that whole thing right there has made these fucking people bother me and my family so much I can't stand it. And I had nothing to do with none of it. That's the only reason they come after us.
So you don't want to talk about Haley?
I just don't want to talk about none of it no more. I want her to come home, but it's out of my hands. I pray for her every night. Just the cops, man. I can't stand them, man. That's the only reason that I'm standing here right now is because of them.
Okay, I thought the clip was slightly longer than that. Jan, you listened to this for the first time this morning. In fact, we listened to it together. What do you make of that brief segment?
Well, I thought two things was kind of odd on it. First was how insistent he was about Timmy not returning to Florida and not giving any particular reason. I mean, he's just insisting, even though Lindsay was there saying, you know, that he acts like sometimes he wants to. I mean, the way he said it, I don't know. I'm not no expert, and this is definitely my opinion, but it just sounded to me like he knew, like, Timmy would be afraid to come back for some reason. And the next thing was, it sounded to me like Lindsay was pumping him for information or trying to get him to talk, to say something more about what happened. By the way, she kept asking him about Haley when he said he didn't want to talk to her, talk about it anymore and all that. I just found it kind of weird, and that's the way it sounded to me.
Okay, I have to break in here. I just spotted a comment in the chat room. Bombshell. Tommy's in jail because of the cops. Oh, you have to love that one. Peter, I know that you've listened to the tape. I'd like to get your take on it.
Well, there are a number of things there. First of all, I think that Jan's instincts are on target. And what I do is I'll take someone like Jan who has a sharp instinct, and I'll be able to put some of the theory that we study and learn and apply and show her why she feels a certain way that she does. Let's begin with Lindsay, if we could. I'm getting a sense from Lindsay from this tape and from the words she used. There's a certain comfortable level that she has using Haley's name. Did you notice that she used Haley's name more than Ron did in last week's Cobra tapes?
Exactly.
And then we see there's a number of sensitive areas there. I'll start with one. Timmy, Tommy's insisting, will not come back to Florida. On one of the tapes, Timmy said, Timmy's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and I think we all recognize that, and they knew they were being recorded, but he just spoke as he was speaking from his heart. And one of the things that Timmy said on tape was that they used to sell without any hassle from the cops. He said, before Haley, they never bothered us before. That presupposes they've been doing the drug sale business for quite some time. Yet, we have Tommy is blaming the police that he's sitting in jail, and I think some of those that enter in the articles you write, Simon, are very, very intelligent people. They're sharp as razors. But they're picking out his own language and throwing it back to him. He believes that he's there and doesn't want to talk about Haley. I also noticed here is a sensitive area. She said, he kept saying, Tim doesn't want to come back to Florida. Lindsay, who I think it has a certain innocence about her, and what I mean is innocence, is that she doesn't know all that these folks do. I don't think she really knows the half of it even. She said, why? Now, that's a question. Tommy answers and says, ask him about it. Right away, why Timmy doesn't want to come back to Florida, that tells me is a very sensitive subject to Tommy.
Exactly.
Our question is, why is that sensitive?
That's what I wanted to know. That was what I was questioning, because it just didn't sound normal to me. Like he was really trying to tell her something. Timmy might know something more.
And then, Simon, we look at the abrupt ending of the tape, and I'm quite sure that the conversation was longer than this. Why is it cut so short?
Oh, well, I think that's easy to answer. But there are two cases here. There's the drug case that these conversations are available to the press through the Florida Sunshine Law, and then there is the Haley case. No one has been charged, therefore nothing involved with the Haley case is admissible under the Sunshine Law. My theory is that Lindsay kept hammering on Timmy. Timmy started to talk, and the tape has been redacted. Now, I should also point out that it's my guess that this tape actually happened about 14 days before the search started of the St. John's River.
That's significant.
Yes, it is. There are a couple of other tapes that I have up and running, but I doubt that you've had an opportunity to listen to, because they're quite long. That there's a name that keeps cropping up in them: Steve Brown, Leonard Padilla, and polygraphs. I think these tapes are pretty much the beginning of that whole search. Denny, did you have an opportunity to listen to the short audio?
Yes, I did.
And what's your thoughts?
My thought is that if I was in the state of Florida and I heard him say that these other people are not coming back, I'd be doing a tap dance, celebrate. I think good news. The more of them that aren't in my state, the better I would like it. But yes, I think this thing about ask him about it, I think there's a tip-off there that something, you know, maybe is going on. And the characters, this cast of characters in this thing, it's just bizarre to me. I mean, I know people like that exist. I've dealt with them, in fact, in the past. But when you hear it and you read about it and then you hear a tape of these people talking, you know, that it's all the law's fault. He's done nothing wrong, but he's being picked on and this kind of stuff. Sometimes that gets a little nauseating to me.
Yeah, no. Okay, it looks like we're having a little bit of a technical issue here, but I'm hoping that I'm hoping that T.J. Hart is with us.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry for the delay.
No problem.
Hi, T.J.
Hello. We had a church picnic that went a little bit long, and so I'm here.
How is your day going?
Very hot, about 95 degrees, and then when you factor in the humidity, it's about 97.
Okay,
so another one, isn't that good?
I sent you an email earlier today. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read it, but...
Unfortunately not.
Oh, okay. It's a brief audio, and it's between Tommy and... Lindsay, and that is what we were talking about. I'm just going to re-queue up. I'm going to do a Nancy Grace.
Okay.
And just play part of it again. I promise I won't make a habit of this.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess I could give it a try.
Okay.
But I'm ready to be back up around my brother and my nieces.
I know. They ain't going to make it there long, Tom.
Yeah, they will. They ain't coming back to Florida, I guarantee you that. Tim ain't going to come back here.
Tim, I think sometimes, just the way Tim talks, he wants to.
Tim won't come back to Florida.
Why?
Ask him that. He don't like it here. People bothering us all the damn time. The damn police constantly messing with us.
Yeah,
you don't want
if
that.
If they find Haley, they won't be messing with you like that anymore.
I know.
It all has to do with finding the little girl, Tom.
I know.
And if it was my little girl, I would not care who was in jail either.
I don't either. Never said I did. You know, I never said nothing like that. I just don't like Florida altogether.
No, I want them to find her and our
me
whole
too.
Our lives to be different. Find out who did it.
I don't know. The damn cop's still gonna bother us.
No, they're not. They're not. Once they find Haley. Once who knows anything. Any teeny tiny little piece of information.
I know, baby. I don't even want to talk about that no more. I love you.
Why? Why?
Because that shit's just... That whole thing right there has made these fucking people bother me and my family so much I can't stand it. And I had nothing to do with none of it. That's the only reason they come after us.
So you don't want to talk about Haley?
I just don't want to talk about none of it no more. I want her to come home, but it's out of my hands. I pray for her every night. Just the cops, man. I can't stand them, man. That's the only reason that I'm standing here right now is because of them.
Okay, TJ, that's probably the first time you've heard that clip.
Yeah, but Lindsay, there's a lot of things that you take in there. You know, first of all, Lindsay's pressing for some answers because evidently, you know, she wants some finality, and evidently she's going to the courtroom to try to get some finality to her marriage to him. But also, you hear him getting upset, and he blames everybody but himself for his misfortunes. The cops made him sell dope. The cops made him steal a gun from a blind guy. You know, the cops made him steal cleaning products from a woman's house. The cops did that to him. The cops made him hit his dad when they were coming off of a drug bench at their home. The cops made him pass out with too many drugs in his system after he dropped off his kid at the bus stop. Yeah, boy, those cops are terrible like that. But also, when he makes reference to Tim, Tim and his wife took off early on, and the reason that was being stated by Tim, I don't guess, is that the cost of living would be a little easier in Massachusetts than it is in Florida, meaning that if you didn't necessarily have a job and maybe times were tough, the state of Massachusetts was a little bit more giving than the state of Florida. The state of Florida would just as soon see you have a job. But the benefits to perhaps not being able to work or not being able to find work were a lot more generous up there in Massachusetts.
Okay, I'll also say this. That clip was played in its entirety, and it comes from one of those DVDs. Now, doesn't it smack of redaction? It doesn't fit the right size. It doesn't fit the right time. I think she was hammering and kept on hammering for...
Well, I think a lot of that was redacted because there were some answers there that just didn't sound... sounded rather non sequitur. They didn't follow in sequence. So, yeah, hell yeah. I mean... yeah, there was some redaction going on there. And I'll tell you what, you know, word is around here is that she had enough of this a long time ago. I guess I haven't seen the papers filed in court, but I believe it was the 30th that there was, the divorce papers were filed. I have to go through and look through that a little bit further. But she'd been using her maiden name for the last couple of weeks. She wants some finality to this. She wants this crap over with. And if her husband had something to do with it, fine. If he didn't have anything to do with it, fine. She wants it to be done. And, she was actually putting the hammer to him in the questioning. There's no doubt about that. And it seems that, she's had enough.
Okay, Peter, I think that was a great blind taste test. All right. He had not heard the clip before. What do you make of TJ's answer?
Well, good afternoon, TJ.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I think he's dead on target. We noticed that when I said before that Lindsay is innocent, what I mean is that Lindsay, I don't believe, has any knowledge of the disappearance of Haley Cummings, and I don't believe she's involved at all. What her knowledge may or may not be about how Tommy made money is a different story, but on Haley Cummings, just judging her language, I believe she passed a polygraph, and here's why. Some of the examples I've heard from her go along with what we heard today. She called her by the first name Haley. She then called her the little girl, not that little girl, but the little girl, closer, and then she said this, something really telling. She said, "And if it was my little girl, I would not care who was in jail either." She said, "If it was my little girl," that's a very fair thing for someone to presuppose. How would I answer? How would I respond? How would I feel if that was my child? And this, it seems to me, that it upset Tommy because he said, you'll notice he doesn't answer questions directly. I don't either.
No, he didn't.
I never said nothing like that. I just don't like Florida altogether. I think that she was pressing him. I think she's had a real suspicion, and I do recall someone saying that she received a phone call right after Tommy took the polygraph, and she blew a fuse because she wasn't informed by Tommy that he was taking the polygraph. She blew a fit, and I think that she felt, and probably sees now, Tommy has withheld information from her, and this is his wife, the mother of his children. I also would like to ask anybody's opinion on this one. When he says they're bothering my family, who is my family that he's referring to? Because I don't think it's Lindsay and the kids.
No, it's the Croslin clan, and that seems to be, as dysfunctional as that clan is, that appears to be first and foremost with each and every one of the members of that Croslin clan. That's their family, and then their immediate families with their wives, you know, with the two boys, seems to come secondary. At least it appears in the way they speak.
That's what I draw from as well. Yeah, that's how I see it as well, that their drug family, their business trade family comes first. And I think that Lindsay, not only does she not know what is going on in terms of Haley's disappearance, I think that Lindsay has ideas but doesn't know for sure how Tommy brought money in ever, how they had to provide. And TJ is correct that Massachusetts would certainly be more generous and more favorable to someone without a job than someone maybe in Florida.
Denny, you're the thinker on this panel.
Yes.
Oh, he was busy thinking.
I agree with everyone else. I don't find any arguments to what everybody else has said. I think TJ and Peter, everybody's pretty much right on here with just taking a look at this conversation and the potential meanings. And, you know, the Crosland clan, and they certainly are that. I'm in agreement.
Diddy, I have a question for you since you covered the mob extensively. When they say my family, okay, as a guy who grew up in the greater Chicago area, I know what that means.
Okay.
I mean, I know what that means. I kind of get the feeling that that probably just hit a little a hot spot for you, too. And he said, they keep messing with my family.
Yes. Yeah, you can, there are some similarities to organized crime speak. And, you know, depending, like you, TJ, from the Chicago background, those types of phrases or terms probably mean more to, you know, to people from the big cities and so forth than they would to others. But, yeah, definitely those terms have, you know, organized crime related also.
One thing that I want everybody to keep in mind is that this family originated from Michigan and also Tennessee as well. So, you know, Florida is not their native state.
You're trying to tell them?
I will tell you, I'm trying to say that Detroit's got a few problems. Flint's got a few problems that aren't exactly, you know, unlike Chicago. So, it's kind of where I'm getting at. Same with Saginaw.
Well, Tommy said, because I, that whole thing, night, there's been these effing people bother me and my family so much I can't stand it. I had nothing to do with none of it. That's the only reason they came after us. Again, we have him presupposing that he was able to sell drugs without being bothered beforehand. I don't know for the life of me how any of them thought, with Haley missing, that they weren't going to be watched, that they could go on these drug transactions and not think they're being watched. Even the media was following Ron and Misty. But in his statement, he says, because I, we have the double I, usually means the increase of tension and stress. That whole thing right there has made these effing people bother me and my family. So the first person he's concerned about is him. The second person is the second concern is the family. Yet I don't remember any news stories about Lindsay being saying to the media, please leave me alone, or the children being harassed, or anything like that. It may be going on, but I haven't seen it.
The only thing she stated once, and that was before they really started putting the squeeze on the Crosland family, was something she had said on TV, and I had her on radio. I also happened to be there when she said it for radio as well. Is that what had happened was they had a yard sale going on, and this is when Mama Crosland and Daddy Crosland decided to go up and see Floor Hollers for a while. They were zipping, getting out of Dodge. And it was right about the time of the stolen checks and the stolen gun.
I remember that.
And
yep.
And she said, we're getting out of here, too. Excuse me just for a second. All right. So she said that they were heading to Massachusetts as well. They wanted to move there because, you know, things would be a little easier. And that's where another one of the references that came into play about my brother Timmy, he ain't coming back to Florida. So, That was another thing that kind of filtered in with this conversation. But, him being bothered, come on. His family being bothered, come on. What they wanted was unfettered trade for the drugs, small-time drugs, and he'd been doing that long before Haley and that situation came along.
And I think there's a certain amount of tension that he's showing there when he says, when he claims that, she says, yes, but they'll leave us alone. If they find Haley, this is a quote, if they find Haley, they won't. The first time she mentions Haley, she mentions by the name. The next two references, she says, the little girl, not that little girl, like they distance themselves. And then she goes into, my little girl, I would not come after either. She's showing a very steady use of the language. She's not seeking to distance herself at all. I have no red flags to think that she's being deceptive at all. Then we have, and I asked before the show came on, I asked if there was something different about this tape from the other tapes, because he says, I pray for her every night. Just the cop's man. I can't stand a man. That's the only reason that I'm standing here right now is because of them. In statement analysis, when the words sit, sitting, stand, stood, when they enter in, we simply red flag them because they're usually a sign of tension. You may have well been standing someplace, but the reason it'll come into your language is because it usually means a controversy of some form. Often people in the drug world will say that the drugs were sitting someplace. Now, we know drugs don't sit, just the way we know guns don't go off by themselves. This is a place of real tension for him, and he's going to shut her down. He's not going to answer her questions. He's angry. You can hear it in his voice. But I also hear in her voice, and this is not part of statement analysis, but just my own personal opinion, she is pressing the issue because she wants to know. And I think she's sincere.
Oh, yeah, she wants finality. You're right. She wants finality. She wants it done.
Think of what it must be like for her to... She's married to an addict. He uses, he sells. She's got children to raise. I mean, her life and the lives of those children have to be really, really difficult at best.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply don't see her as someone that has been part of this gang. She seems like someone on the outside. She's not sought media attention. She certainly could have. I mean, she could have gotten her 15 minutes of fame from Nancy Grace. She's not been making press conferences. She seems like someone that wants to raise children, and it looks to me like she wants to run about as far as away as she can with them.
Actually,
I wonder what message she's going to use on the
Nancy Grace thing. it's a different tape, and I don't have the soundbite, but I do have it online. Lindsay Croslin is not seeing eye to eye with Tommy. And she comes out with this great comment. I can see the headlines on Nancy Grace already. Tommy has his first fight behind bars.
With Lindsay.
Yeah.
Simon.
Just priceless. And actually, on that same tape, Tommy goes into complete denial about everything. The charges are bullshit. I didn't do nothing.
He never did. He never stole that gun, and he never stole that poor lady's cleaning products off her porch either. He never stole a blind guy's gun, and he never stole a lady's cleaning products off her porch.
And he also says he ain't going to do more than 3 years because he didn't do nothing.
Well, we don't want to brag about how much we're going to do, are we?
Huh?
We don't want to brag. We don't want to boast on how little our sentence will be, do we? That's
yeah,
not a
look
good thing. I learned that this week.
Actually, in a conversation with his father, he says, 3 years ain't nothing. I can do that. And, you know, there's no way they're going to stick sis with 25 years. Well,
folks don't know that she's looking at 100.
Right.
These are the same dotes who thought that she had her bond reduced, and she didn't.
Hey, Simon?
Yes.
I'm still stuck on the audio you played about Tommy and his contention about the police. I'm going to use the word harassment. He didn't use that word directly, but that was the implication. Back ago when I was doing some deputy sheriffing in central New York, I had we had a couple of clans. Now, these weren't the real heavy crime types. They were the pains in the rear end types. They would do some burglaries. They would do some larcenies. A lot of it was, you know, fights. They were always in these barroom brawls and domestic issues and so forth. So they could almost keep a few officers busy just by themselves. And there was a strategy that was never written down, but what we wanted to do was either get these people in jail, but most of their crimes didn't carry real stiff sentences. So the other possible goal was to drive them out of the county. Now, yes, that's passing the buck. It made it somebody else's headache. I admit that. But the problem was that we didn't want our department or the citizens of the county to have to deal with on a regular basis. So that was an unwritten strategy, if you will. And when I was doing research for one of my my organized crime books, we were addressing the Tony Spilotro era in Las Vegas. Now, here was a real legitimate big-time criminal. And the strategy of the police department here in Vegas at that time was they wanted to either get Tony behind bars or drive him out of Las Vegas. Again, I don't believe that was ever a written strategy, but the guy who devised it, who was a commander of Metro's Intelligence Bureau, told me that's the strategy he came up with. They wanted to get rid of Tony Spilotro. Well, he was like a cancer, he and his associates, and they didn't really care how they did it. If he ended up in jail, that was great. If not, having him gone was a secondary method to get rid of him. Their main concern was to get him out of
green button for me, sir.
So my question, I guess, to maybe you and the other panelists, is what do you think of that strategy? It was to put pressure on these individuals, both in my little county situation.
Not a wacky advisor, I would let you read
the major with a major criminal like Spilotro, this was to get rid of him, and pressure was one way to do it.
I'm not sure I entirely follow you here, Danny. Are you saying, you know, is this pressure on the Crosland clan period, or pressure on one of the Croslins?
Well, I think law enforcement probably is not real enthused. Local law enforcement in Putnam County probably isn't real enthused about having any of these players in their jurisdiction. I wouldn't be. If I were the sheriff, if I was a citizen living in Putnam County, so I would want to come up, and I'm not trying to speak for Putnam County. I don't know what their strategy is, but I would not rule out the idea, if I were in charge there, of saying, look, let's make it so tough on these individuals that they can't draw a breath without one of us, without somebody from our department breathing down their neck. And if we can get them on something substantial, like perhaps now with the drug charges, great. If we can't do that, let's make it so uncomfortable for not just one of them, but any of them to be in our county that they're going to think twice about it. And if they move to Massachusetts, if they move to Tennessee, if they move wherever the hell they move to, if they're gone and don't come back, we've got a victory for Putnam County or whatever county you're having to be talking about. I was talking about a county up that we did this with in upstate New York. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police used the same strategy to try to rid Sin City of organized crime. Either get them in jail. If you can't do that, force them out because there's so much pressure on them, they really want to move somewhere else where things might be a little easier. So that's my point. I don't know if Putnam County is using that specific strategy, but it seems to me not to be a bad one to use. The problem is, if you don't get them in jail, then you're making the problem someone else's headache in the next county or the next state. But if your job is to get rid of them out of your county away from your citizens, and I don't think pressuring them is a real bad move.
Oh, I agree with you. There's a question.
I will say one thing about Putnam County is that they do have problems with their jail as far as overcrowding. They're at 130% or something like that, almost to the point where they might have to have the feds come in and and do something about that. The overcrowding is ridiculous. They're having problems. The reason why some of the bond is kind of set a little low, and we've seen that before in certain cases, is because they have no place to put them in the jail. So I think there's probably some credence into, thinking that if we could perhaps get some troublemakers to move along, it might not be a bad thing.
Actually, rumor has it that the PCSO does listen into this show. So I have a suggestion for them. That there's this guy in Arizona. His name is Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I'm pretty certain if they give Joe a call, he can give them the tips on how to set up a tent city.
Hey, you know, the climate's right. Probably be cooler in a tent than it would be in that jailhouse.
And I'm sure Joe Arpaio would be, happy to act as consultant on the project. It's pretty easy.
Sure he would.
You just get a bunch of tents and a bunch of barbed wire. Off you go.
If you mess up, you got to wear pink, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of what Arpaio does, but the tent
got the right idea on most things.
Right, the tent city idea is a good one. We have a question coming in from the chat room, and it's a bit of an unfair question because I know most of the panel haven't had a chance to listen to all of the audio that I released today, but it's, why was Crystal's PI, Steve Brown, working with Tommy's attorney? It's a good question. And anyone want to try fielding it?
I was under the impression that those two were friends.
They are. I heard that from Steve Brown.
Yeah. That's where I thought it came from.
Right. Actually, what I find interesting is that in the tapes that I released earlier today, Steve Brown's name comes up several times. Steve Brown is the guy that is suggesting that Tommy takes the infamous polygraph. Steve Brown is the guy, it's hard to unravel their language sometimes, but Steve Brown is apparently some sort of go-between between Tommy and Leonard Padilla.
Uh-huh.
And there is discussion about how Padilla's going to fess up the money and move the whole family to California. And Lindsay's going, oh, I'm not sure how that's going to work, because, even if you get out on bail, I just can't see them, letting you move to California.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't make no sense.
No, it doesn't.
Peter, you and I talked earlier this week, and we were talking about the first few hours. In fact, I know all of the panel have shared the information. What's your theory on my theory and your theory and everyone else's theory?
Well, I think that we will come to a conclusion, and I think this case will be solved, and I think that that probably there'll be some elements of surprise, and then I think there's going to be an anticlimactic ending in the sense that the things that we know about substance abuse, domestic violence, the interaction between the family members, I think that it's going to get me in trouble, but the Nene letter may have more to tell us than we have thought before.
I think so too.
I'd like to look back, if we could, Simon, on that initial 911 call, and then the initial interview, which was given probably a matter of hours after Haley went missing. And then I'd like to, if we have time, just to maybe touch upon that with TJ, some of the things about Nene that really are fascinating and may have more to tell us than we think.
Let's stick on Nene. Fire away, Peter.
Well, Nene's letter. I looked at the letter. I did a workup on it. And what I didn't find was any blaring red flags of deception. What that means is that within the writing itself, I'm not finding deception. It doesn't mean deception doesn't exist. Other evidence needs to corroborate or deny the content of the letter. But the basics of the accidental OD may not be something that is just completely off the wall. Parents do give their children NyQuil or Benadryl or other type medications to put them to sleep. We have found many times over in our country with the prescription drug problem that we have that parents will use small amounts of narcotics, of oxycodone, of Vicodin, of codeine to put their children to sleep. Would I be completely surprised if we learned that Ron and Misty had normally done that practice to make Haley go to sleep? Not at all. In fact, it might fit even the profile. What we're looking at is that family. What I'm concerned about is why the need to cover up and what happened after. And there are some indicators there that sexual abuse may have been part of it. But go back to Nene's letter. Nene's letter basically is about, if that was Nene that wrote it, an accidental overdose while they're partying to keep her quiet.
Okay. What's your question for TJ?
Just TJ, your thoughts on that possibility that that's how Haley died.
It's a number of theories. To be quite honest with you, very well may be the reason that she's not with us or can't be found is the fact that she might have died of an accidental overdose. That is very plausible. Getting back to Nene's letter, she was basically repeating things out of a sworn affidavit from a Joe Pytko, alleged sworn affidavit. For all we knew, this was a ruse used by the police to see if she knew anything. Ironically, it was at the same time that the pond at Mondex was drained. Because in that letter, she talked about Greg Page possibly being the guy who put the child in a plastic bag and threw her into a pond or a body of water. And it was right at the, very much at the same time that the pond at Mondex was drained, looking for, quote, evidence of Haley. And the odd thing about that was the cop could pissed as all hell because he said, one doesn't have anything to do with the other. Besides, if it did, we wouldn't tell you guys. You know, just spitting like a wet hen. And then at the end of the letter, she's writing this to her boyfriend and the father of her child. The guy's name is Donnie Spells. She says, "You were with me that night. You remember, don't you? You remember, don't you?" Almost like, you know, let's get some verification. That doesn't say anything about guilt or innocence or anything else other than, yeah, that was the night we were together, right? Looking for some kind of an agreement there. But Nene also figured into the several days beforehand and with the drug and sex binge that she was on. Nene was her chauffeur. Nene was her best friend for those 3 days. Now, whether or not somebody's your best friend or not, if something happens and you've been very close to those people for the last 3 or 4 days, suddenly that person's going to be your default best friend when something does happen. So you'd almost have to imagine that a call was possibly made communication was possibly made to Nene for some kind of help, or perhaps Nene was even there visiting for all we knew. But there are other things that come into play. A car that had been missing its car keys. and that car suddenly, when it's found, has blue fluid splashed all over the trunk of it, as if to cover something up. Why would that have happened? There's just a lot of things, a lot of peculiar little things that you really can't put your finger on. Nothing tangible, nothing that you can really say, aha. There's no aha moment, but there's just a lot of curious little things that intertwine with this young woman that makes me feel that she knows something, not that she was culpable, but that she knows something more about this than what she's leading on. Hell, Amber Brooks told Cobra the same thing, pushed her, saying, look, a lot of people would say people don't like me because I had a relationship with Ron, had a falling out with Misty over a Facebook page or a MySpace page, blah, blah, blah. But the person you really got to press is Nene Pravat. And I still believe that she holds some information.
And on that subject, unless I'm very much mistaken, we do have William Cobra Storbs on the line.
Hey, Simon, I've been on the line for, a long time now. I would have been on the line properly at 4 o'clock. Sorry for the tardiness, but I was almost a victim of racial profiling, damn it.
Well,
we're
having a huge problem with our switchboard this afternoon.
Oh, Lord. Listen, I heard Denny talking, and I thought that I said, Denny, you're reading my mail. That's exactly what they did to me. They got my ass the hell out of town. But I'm glad to be out of town because it was a little bit uncomfortable. In 30 years, I've never ran into anything like that in my life. And it still ain't over. I mean, one side of it's over, but the other side, the fat lady ain't saying yet. But the racial profiling, man, that's very interesting. I got a real deep, dark suntan, and I went and rented an undercover car. I'll tell you, it's a Dodge Charger, because I'm turning in tomorrow, get another one, because this one's burned already. But as I'm riding down the road, they thought it was a black man stole the white Dodge Charger. He says, your name William Stobbs? I said, yes, sir, it is. He goes, show me some identification. You're supposed to be a white feller. Oh, but anyway, I've been listening to your thing. I'm about to wreck twice listening to Denny and Mr. Peter over there, and now the Nene letter and all the stuff going on there. And, it's just like anything else. You just got to keep squeezing and squeezing because I'm telling you, there is this way too. I got more questions 2 days after I got there than I had. I mean, I'm telling you what, there's just a lot of ahas. I think there's a lot of ahas, TJ. Ha-ha! Ha-ha!
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I do. I believe it. And that letter was snuck to me for some particular. Everybody's taking credit for it, but I'm the one who got the letter, and I'm the one who released
that's
it to
right.
you guys. And of course, it went on out.
That's
from there,
right.
But
you got. That's
right.
You did. You got that, and
right.
and you set it up to us. And
I'm
always thankful for that because it was really hard for you to get because of
that was damn difficult.
You know.
Well, here's the reason I got that letter, and it's all behind the scenes as well. That letter was never to fall in anybody's hands. And when I got word that letter was out there, I had to do some of my best stuff to get it. Well, I got it, but I got it for a reason. And it was the total opposite reason I got it was what it was intended for. It was intended to clear. It wasn't intended to do anything else. And that's the only reason I was able to get the letter into my possession. So, therefore, I think the letter does have some credence in there. And, I conducted an in-depth investigation with Nene and also co-signed her, bonded her out of jail, and Amber Brooks. And between the two of them and those tapes, which they both agreed to tape, haven't never been released yet. But they're so – the only person I probably would consider releasing them to would be Peter, because if he had listened to them, TJ, we'd probably come to your rescue and say, yeah, I think there's some other folks involved in this. There's some other folks that know what happened. And, whether they were involved day one, hour one, or they were involved 5 weeks or 5 months later, culpable. I was watching a little program the other night, and I think a lawsuit should be filed because on the civil side of any investigation, you can get more information. You can violate pretty much all the other standards of law in a criminal case. Look at the O.J. Simpson deal, for example. If they had
brought
it first, they would have got a criminal conviction. But they didn't. They went for a criminal conviction, and the civil deal side, he lost. But the thing of it is, in this case, you just have to figure out who you're going to sue and who would you bring in. And there's more questions you could ask. Now, I would hang Misty for culpable negligence for the simple reason she was in charge as the babysitter. Then I would turn around and have Ronald. Now, the person who would be able to bring this suit, if their hands are totally washed clean, would be the mother, the natural mother, or the grandparents or anybody in the family tree. That's the direction I would take the thing into. If, of course, you know, I'm not discounting Putnam County Sheriff's Office, because Jeff Hardy would have never said the little girl's in a lot of trouble if he didn't think that they were getting close on this thing. So they may already have it figured out, may just trying to put the piece together of how they tie in all the players. I'm sure it wasn't just a single player or two. And
They may already have it.
And that just may be us all sitting around here, armchair quarterbacking at this stage, because, you know, most of us are so rusty, been off of it for so long, the only thing we can point back to is, see, I told you so, there was something smoking over there, why didn't you go check it before it burned into a fire, you know? But I have a lot of trust, and, you know, I was accused of before of kissing the Putnam County Sheriff's Office ass, but I'll tell you, I never did. I only spoke honestly of them. I've watched their investigation. They did a damn good job. And it's damn difficult, unless you got a murder weapon, a confession, or DNA, and everything pointing to something hardcore, you just can't put the damn thing together. And it ain't their fault. It's just a matter of time before the pieces fall into place and they're able to do what they do. But I've always stuck up for them. TJ, you know I have. And I'm not in any harm's way, no reason for me to kiss their ass. But I'm going to tell you what, Jeff Hardy and his gang definitely have done over. I don't know any other agency, even Broward County, one of the finest agencies in law enforcement here in South Florida. It would be a difficult case for them. It's damn difficult. I mean, damn difficult to next to impossible. But I think they're moving in the positive direction. And you keep asking questions and you keep listening to these different things popping off. And pretty soon, you know, they're going to understand that maybe somebody wants to trade a little freedom for some information. You know, they got them all in the right position. And time will sweat it out.
I need to break in. It's a very quick question. I know the answer to it, but for some reason people want to hear it from TJ's lips. All right. The business about who picked up Haley from the bus stop.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Well,
the official line is Shaolin told you it was who?
Ronald. That's what Captain Shaolin told me.
Right.
That doesn't mean that's what happened. That's just what Captain Shaolin told me.
Right. But for some reason, that this is just one of questions that goes round and round and round.
Yeah, like did Babe Ruth call his shot in the 32 World Series? Yeah, we'll never know. But the thing is that Shaolin and I were both on HLN's Crime News with Mike Alanos. And if you'll can't remember when it was, I can't remember if it was March or April. It was early on in the investigation, but he and I were talking between the commercial things. He was on camera, but we could hear each other. And during the commercials breaks, we were talking back and forth because he was from the Chicago area with this, that, and the other. And I remember it well as when he told me that he told Galanis the same thing, and it's on the transcript. I mean, so you can hear it from his lips and not just TJ reporting it. So, for whatever, significant piece of somebody's chess game that is, that's how that got to be. Now, other people, Cobra has talked to other people who've told him different stories as well. So, like I said, did Shaolin say it? Yes. Did I report that Shaolin said it? Yes. Is that actually what happened? God only knows.
Okay, and I want to go out to the lines. We have someone that's been waiting for quite a long time. They're calling in from the 757 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, Simon. This is Mitzi. I have several questions. The first question I have is, what do you guys know about the motion that was filed for Ronald Cummins to be bonded out? It was filed on the 26th. Do we know if Padilla is still trying to get him out?
There's been a lot of rumbling on that. Don't know how far all of that went. There was supposed to be some kind of hearing, but I didn't even know that it took place.
Oh, so the hearing did take place.
No, I said I didn't know that it took place.
So I don't know
if it has or hasn't. But it just, it was just the rumble.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe Peter can answer or give us an input on a couple of things that Tommy said on the audios that Simon put out this morning with one of the things that Tommy had said in the audio. He said, I guess I can give it a try. And I guess that it's out of his hands, and I'm thinking, what's out of his hands, and what is it that he's going to give it a try?
I know the part you're referring to, and I think it's a good question. When he said it's out of my hands, I think he's saying a very basically truthful statement. I think he has knowledge that he knows that Haley is deceased, and there's nothing he can do. When he says that he prays every night, in fact, I don't doubt that. He may be praying for her. He may be praying more likely for himself to get out of jail. But I think just that. I think that's that he's saying this is out of his hands. There's nothing he can do. He can't bring her back. That's the way I heard it, at least.
Okay, and also
The other part might have been a redacted question that he might have answered, too, because I thought that sounded a little disjointed the way he answered it.
Right.
I couldn't tell.
Oh, that tape's been hacked and slashed.
Ah, okay. And then my last question is, because the first one was answered about the PI, that's working for Crystal and Tommy and everybody. That's still a confused mess to me. For Cobra, on his audio, Ron told him that he took Haley to the bus stop and picked her up to the bus stop. And I know this is something old, and it's like beating a dead horse, but that was the first time I've actually heard of Ronald taking her to the bus stop and picking her up there. I was under the assumption that he took her to school.
Unfortunately, we seem to have lost Cobra.
He's being profiled again.
I could believe it if he was in Arizona.
Well, on the audio with Cobra and Ronald, didn't Ronald tell him that he picked up Haley and put her on his lap and let her drive, steer the car or whatever they were driving?
I think the question is, did he drop her, did he take her to school?
He told Cobra that he dropped her off at the bus stop that morning and that he also picked her up from the bus stop that morning.
Yeah.
Whereas then the other story came in about Haley spilling something on her shirt and having to drive over to Grandma's house and then Misty taking her to school, which I think I read somewhere else that Haley did get to school late that morning and that Misty did walk her in. But Ronald said he dropped her off at the bus stop, so that's something else that is inconsistent with Ronald's statements as well.
One thing that you got to know about this whole bunch. Here's the answer you're going to get. It's going to change every time, and it all depends on who you ask and when you ask it. Because
right.
I got to tell you, you're either, you know, talking to the wall, or you're talking to a mud puddle. Because you know you're not going to get a straight answer, and it will change to fit. The narrative of the day.
Even by the same person.
That's something I like to bring up there that TJ said. When TJ reported that he was told that Ronald picked up Haley from the bus stop, what he was speaking was, he's speaking from memory, but the memory was told to him by the law enforcement official. In Nene's letter, it shows that she is being truthful in the sense that it's coming from memory. Now, it could be a personal memory, an experiential memory, or it could be a memory because she saw it on TV, or it could have been fed to her by someone in law enforcement, and she is recalling it. So it's not that she's being truthful and accurate, but that she's her language is from memory. Whether the memory is accurate or not is a different story. With Ronald and driving Haley, we've heard some differing accounts, but one of the things that we do notice is that Ronald gives extra details, which the absence of many details is a red flag, but the overabundance of details is a red flag. Now, for someone that seems to have at times a foggy memory, here is stark clarity about the car ride home and everything about it. That caught my attention. So when someone speaks from memory, it may not be personal experiential memory. It's maybe a memory they heard or saw. When someone gives a lot of details, it kind of catches our attention. We say, this person thinks they're not being believed, so they're being persuasive. This person is making up too many details because they are fabricating. Or he actually has a really great, wonderful memory, which wouldn't sit well in terms of my understanding of narcotics.
I pick option 2 and 3. The narcotics and also adding the details. Okay, well, that's all my questions for today. Thank you so much, and I'll let you guys finish the last 10 minutes of the show. See you next Sunday.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, I floated around a document earlier this week. I know you've all seen it. TJ, does my theory about, you know, what happened gel with yours?
Pretty much. I would say there's a broad consensus there. I would probably differ on a few details, but very much in general, very very close to some of the things that we've seen, some of the things that have been reported, some of the allegations that have been made, and some of the other facts that have been kind of found behind the scenes. Yeah, I'd say in general, there's an agreement there.
Where do we move next? That's really the question. I mean, I thought that the search would break the case wide open. I thought the 15-year sentence for Hope Sykes would break it open, but they're sitting tight.
You know, my biggest fear was that this thing with the river was going to be just like the draining of the Mondex Pond, all the hubbub and all the this, that, and the other to turn up nothing. But apparently they found something, nothing of human remains, but they found something of an evidentiary nature that they're not disclosing.
Right, and is that why they moved the status to homicide?
That would be my speculation.
Denny, your thoughts?
Yes, I agree with TJ. That sounds like a reasonable conclusion about the change in the status of the case or the classification to homicide. I also, like you, thought that some of these developments would break the case wide open. They generated renewed interest, but they haven't broken it wide open as I had hoped it they would. And I guess we got to wait now for another shoe to drop. excuse me. And they apparently have some confessions or admissions by some of the players here, the Tommy or Misty or whoever. And I believe they need now corroborating evidence. And my concern is that if they never positively can prove that Haley is dead through the finding of evidence, her bones, what have you, we're going to be left with this situation where is it really true? And I would hate to have this case end on that note, that there's always going to be this lingering doubt, at least for some of us, is she really gone? Peter said a while back that he believes the case is going to be concluded, and I certainly hope he's right. Think of a worse outcome than to have, for some of us, always this doubt as to what actually happened. Is she really dead? Is she alive? You know, some conclusive information. And I hope that's not the way this thing lines up. I hope Peter is right and that there's a conclusive end to it. So we can all, closure, if you want to call it that. But I really think I hope it doesn't end with the doubts out there. I hope there's some closure and conclusion to the case.
Look, let's go out to the phone lines. We have someone coming in from the 724 area code. Well, what's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, this is Peggy. I'll make it quick. I'm curious about the comments about how someone will give details with so much specificity. Is that their way of running away from what the question truly is? Like when Ronald is asked something specific and then he details Haley was sitting on my lap and driving the truck, is that his way of trying to camouflage what he actually does know?
Sounds like a Peter question to me.
I think so. I think that when the general principle is this, if you're asked a question and you've left some real gaps and the answer is very vague, we red flag that. We know we need to ask more questions. If we get a response that has really just far too many details, and I'll give you a good example of that. When Casey Anthony was first asked about Zenny the Nanny, do you remember the list of details that she gave about the non-existent nanny? About her
hair,
it was just insane. The hair straightener and the perfect teeth and things you would never describe another person with. That's a red flag, too, because they're trying to persuade rather than report. But take a look at Misty's answers to the 911 operator when the 911 operator says, what did she look like? The first thing Misty does is answer the question with a question, showing how sensitive this thing is. She'll say, how tall is she? And then Misty responds saying, how tall is she? Answering question with a question. Well, she has brown curly hair. And what I noticed as I was going through this week, how many times Misty referred back to the curly hair, and someone commented to me, one of the commentators said, is it possible that the last thing Misty saw on Haley as they were carrying her out was the brown hair falling to the side, falling out of the arms of the carrier? And that, tell you, that
possible.
just sent a chill down my spine hearing that. Because we talked about the brick already that was in her mind, but what about the hair? How tall is she? Like long hair, like curly, with curls. This is Misty's answer about how tall she is. Long curls, what color?
Almost sounded It almost sounds like she was trying to buy some time to figure out the answer to the next question that they might be asking, or she was fearful that they might ask as well.
Yeah, that's actually the textbook answer. If someone answers a question with a question, they're stalling because the question is sensitive. What we then explore is, why is it sensitive? When Casey Anthony was first put on the phone with the 911 operator, the 911 operator says, can you tell me what's going on? And Casey says, excuse me? Question mark. She's stalling for time. She wasn't probably expecting to be put on that phone, and she's got to stall for an answer. A very simple question, how tall is Haley? And this turned into quite a thing with Misty holding the phone back and looking for cues from Ron. It's a real simple question.
Simon, I found your article today so interesting about the 911 call. That's why I think I was inspired to call in now, because I found that extremely, your whole article, very, very interesting.
I appreciate it. Thank you. The contributors were really quite helpful in pointing out how often she referred back to that hair, and that really sat with me.
Seems to happen a lot in 911 calls.
We're getting to the getting very close to the wire here. Someone from the chat room wants to know, where is Tommy's red truck? Anyone know the answer?
Not right now. I couldn't tell you if it's Lindsay has it or who has it.
I don't know either.
Okay, we're going to take one very quick call. And we're not going to take that quick call. They just failed from the line. I do want to go around the table though and get everyone's thoughts. I'm going to start with Jan. I'm going to pick on her.
My thoughts. I'm really kind of confused on all of it, just like everybody else is. I mean, we have so many different stories that we hear. But I think the main thing is we still need to find Haley, find out where she is, one way or another. And then the rest will work its way out.
TJ.
We could be here talking about the same thing a year from now, honestly. This is this is just how stop and go this case has been. I hope that we're not, but chances are we will be.
PETA.
I think Hope Sykes' 15-year sentence is a catalyst, and I think it's the reverberation is about to be felt, and things are going to pick up, and we're going to get more news coming out soon.
I hope so. I hope you're right.
Me too.
Denny.
I'm with everybody on that one. I think we need something definitive. We need closure to this thing, and I hope I can see where TJ's coming from, that with some of the players involved and so forth, we could be here a year from now. But I hope sooner than that, and we need something definitive. And also, Simon, I'm in a couple of hours, I'm going to the kickoff for our friend Andrew DiDonato's documentary. So wish us well, please, and I hope it's very successful.
Oh,
that's off to you, Denny.
And I spoke to Andrew yesterday. I think you have a great documentary there. I think it's going to do very, very well indeed.
Thank you.
Okay. I presume, assume, we will be doing this again next week. So till then, you know, thank you so much for, you know, so much to everyone that contributed this afternoon. Have a great day, and we'll all be talking again soon. Bye.
Thank you all for being with us today. Have a good evening. Bye.